everybody, and thank you for sticking with us. We did have some technical difficulties, so if you are watching this live, I appreciate you sticking with us. If you're watching in the replay, it doesn't matter to you, and if you're just listening to it on the podcast, it doesn't matter to you. But for those who are with us today, which is September 30th, 2025, so I appreciate you sticking with us. We did have a couple of technical difficulties, and sorry, my earbuds just clicked on because it popped up on Facebook and I got confused for a second. So I wrong start to the day for sure. But moving forward, this is Hashtag No Limits. I am your host, Shelley Kino. Hashtag No Limits is about people who society places limits upon, but who are busting through those limits. Ophelia says in Hamlet, we know who we are, but not who we will be. And I believe that to be 100% true, and that there is no better or more beautiful example than the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. For those who don't know, a very quick, very simplistic science lesson here, the caterpillar literally dissolves into its cells and then reforms into a butterfly. But it's not finished struggling. It has to continue to struggle to get out of the cocoon in order for its wings to take it everywhere it's going to go. That's not easy. Neither is busting through limits that society places upon people. And today, my guest is going to talk to us not just about the limits that society places on a person with disabilities, but what it's like being that person's sibling. And I haven't had a lot of guests to talk about siblings, and I'm really excited to bring her to you because her insight is beautiful, and there's a whole organization now that supports siblings in Illinois. And so I'm excited to be able to bring that information to you. Before we get to Tara, I just want to remind you to give us a like and tell us where you're watching from, or give us a hashtag live and where you're watching from, a hashtag replay if you're watching in the replay and where you're watching from, and give us a like, a subscribe, and click that notification button so that you don't miss an episode with my wonderful guests. And I promise other times it's much smoother than this beginning. I'm not really sure what's going on today. But anyway, all that said, I'm now going to bring on Tara. Hi, Tara. How are you?
Hi, good. I'm so sorry. I don't know what happened. I'm glad that we can connect and talk. So thank you so much for having me today.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, technology is great when it works, but you know, when it doesn't go the way we expect it to, it can be kind of flustering. So
I tend to blame it. I'm living in Dubuque, Iowa. I blame it in Iowa. Yep. Every
time. Okay. Well,
but anyway,
I've never heard that as a reason, but it sounds like a good one to me. I don't know. So tell me and the audience a little bit about yourself and kind of what, like I said at the beginning, you're a sibling. So just give us a little bit of history of that.
So I have a brother who is 4 years younger than me, Nick, and he was born with cerebral palsy. And that was due to really a birth injury. My mom, unfortunately, Nick was breached, so he had lost oxygen. And, you know, growing up with Nick was wonderful. It had many, many challenges. But when I talk about my history and why I started SIBS, he's the reason, right? Mm-hmm. I have worked in the field of developmental disability for over 30 years, 35 years, and he is what made me really do my job really well. Okay, so when we talk about SIBS, I'm able to bring my experience working in the field to not just siblings, but families and the individual with a disability. Unfortunately, my brother passed away in 2019, and at that time, it was interesting, and you'll hear this from other siblings that lose a brother or sister with a disability particularly. I felt lost. I felt like I had lost my purpose. Like, I didn't know what I was going to do, because everything that I did, my work, my other job, the SIBS, everything revolved around helping my brother. All the resources and time and energy spent, you know, trying to make his life better was gone, and I didn't know what to do. Like, who am I now without him? But I quickly realized that I still have a purpose. So it's honoring him through my organization, supporting Illinois Brothers and Sisters. Through that, I can talk about him all the time. You know, I share my experiences in life with him. And so it helps me feel more connected. The other thing that really helped by starting this organization 18 years ago was that I had already a community. I had a huge community of siblings, and I already had that support waiting for me. And they were quick to say, nope, 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 you can't stop. You got to keep going.
And it is truly inspiring, first of all, that you've started the organization and what you are doing with it. Something that if it's not too painful for you to talk about, is I want to talk about what you said about, like, your life was consumed. I don't know if that's the right word, but everything that you did was in relation to how it was going to affect your brother. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that people understand that from a sibling. I think they assume, oh yeah, it's going to be like that for the parent. But can you go into depth a little bit of what you, like, the kinds of things that you did and how they were connected to Nick's care and Nick's life?
I think what really transpired, one thing is I started working in the field when I was 16. So I started doing respite with children that had, and adults eventually, that had developmental disabilities. So once I kind of entered that field, I started going to all kinds of different trainings and trying to learn as much as I possibly could to support my brother, whether it was in his home services that he had or other supports that he would be eligible for, Social Security, Medicaid, Medicare, helping him have those government benefits, and really investigating how else we can make his life happy. We spent a lot of time, I should say, I spent a lot of time trying to get my parents to do future planning. So I got to the point that I wanted to know what their plans were. What did they want to see for Nick? We would have included him in those conversations, but he was mostly nonverbal. I mean, we know as a family that what he wanted, and what he wanted was to stay in his home. It was comfortable. Sure. He had all the supports in there. He had a elevator lift. He had a remodeled bathroom for him. And those are the kinds of things that information, or how those type of things came about, I was able to use it to help other people as well. So everything that Nick kind of gained and accomplished throughout his life, I've been able to help support other people in getting the things that they need. But I'll go back to the future planning thing. So that was huge in my family, because it wasn't something that my dad didn't want to do. He didn't want to hear anything about it. And that is one of the main reasons for starting SIBS, is because it was such a terrible place for me to be in, mm-hmm. that I didn't want other siblings to have to be in that corner either. And luckily I've been able to help families kind of move past that and make some good plans.
Yeah. And I'm so glad you brought that up, because I have run across many families who, they just assume that, oh, a sibling is going to take care of the child when the parents pass away. And that in itself is a concept that someone like myself, I mean, my brother doesn't have any disabilities. And so when my parents pass away, I don't have a concern about what's going to happen to him. And so I think, you know, because that's not something that the typical quote unquote person thinks about, it is difficult sometimes to make yourself have to think about that when it is your child that, first of all, you have to face the fact that when you're gone, who is going to take care of that child? And it doesn't automatically flow to the sibling. And it, I had a sibling on a couple of years ago, and she talked about that it's a gift. You know, a sibling should not feel obligated to take care of their sibling when the parents pass away. If it's something they desire to do and they can do, that's wonderful. But, you know, sometimes it's just not feasible. And so, you know, having those, what I imagine are incredibly difficult conversations.
Mm-hmm. It is, they're very difficult. I've had many conversations with siblings throughout the years and how difficult that conversation is. And a lot of times parents don't want to, they just don't want to burden their kid with having to think about it, you know? Mm-hmm. But a lot of us are here saying, you know, pushing back, saying, okay, well, I'm the only other sibling. I'm the only other person, as far as I know, that's going to be involved in my brother's life. Should something happen to you, I know you don't want to talk about it. You know, you don't, parents right. don't, people don't want to talk about what right. death in general. So there's no blame on the parents. And, you know, over the years, we've done these discussions and presentations to parents on, you got to start the conversation. You need to make these future planning. You need to talk to your other kids about what role do they want? You know, what do they feel is going to be helpful for them and their sibling? You know, maybe someone wants to be guardian. Maybe they want their sibling to come live with them. Maybe they want to see their brother or sister live semi-independently or in a group home, and they kind of are their can stay as their sibling and not their caregiver or surrogate parent. You know, this they will continue to have just a their regular sibling relationship. Yeah, and that is one of the hardest things that adult siblings struggle with. I have to say, though, the younger families, younger generation, are starting these conversations. They're very aware of including brothers and sisters in their day-to-day conversations, keeping them up to date on just day-to-day medication, you know, just everything mm-hmm. that you need to know. It's so important because, bam, something happens to your parents, and here's your sibling. You know nothing about their medication. You know nothing about their services. You don't know if they have services. So it's just important to always be open and honest with that your other child and provide, you know, ongoing information. And that's what we say. You know, we are here for information. We unfortunately catch the siblings that don't have any of that. You know, and so mm-hmm. they're like, oh, what do I do next? Like, I recently had a conversation with a sibling that she's starting to figure out, oh, I'm the only one here. I'm going to have to figure out what's going to happen. My mom is getting older now, and what do I do? So she called us, right. and we just kind of started walking through the steps, because it takes more than one conversation to kind of walk right. through this. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And not just more than one conversation, but it takes a lot of planning and exactly what you said. Nobody likes to think about death. You know, I don't know people that are, you know, running out and going, oh, I'm going to make a will and I'm going to plan my funeral and I'm going to pick my cemetery spot. You know, nobody wants to talk about that. And it's even, I think, more difficult in the parents of a child who has a neurodivergence, because they're not just thinking about, and this is going to sound kind of morbid, but they're not just thinking about immediately when the death happens. They're thinking about what happens after the funeral, what happens for the funeral, who's going to, you know, get my child to the funeral, who's going to explain it to my child, who's going to, like you said, all the medications, knowing all of the services, because in Illinois, it's across the country, but we're specifically talking about Illinois today. Adult services in a lot of areas are few and far between. And yep. so in order to know like where they're getting that service, and if they're getting any services, is very important. And that, you know, and we're talking like when we're talking a special needs trust or a planning, I mean, it's not just having the conversation, it's getting it down on legal documentation mm-hmm. so that it can flow as smoothly as mm-hmm. possible. I highly doubt it ever goes smooth.
But the more ducks you have in a row, the better. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, yes, putting it down on paper is always important. We used to always preach letters of intent. This is kind of the book, the guide of your sibling with a disability. And, you know, now it's much easier because you can do it on the computer. You can go back and change things where it literally at one point in time was just a paper document that you would just have to keep redoing it over the years. But that, you know, that's part of the planning process, getting your wills, updating your guardianship, having a special needs trust. That's all the paperwork kind of things that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I just want to read a few comments that we've gotten. Fran says both of her adult kiddos' siblings are their successor guardians. So I want to talk about that phrase, successor guardians. They're in the loop as much as possible. And then she says she has planned her funeral and for both of her children. Their future is planned as much as possible. I have a line of friends ready to walk them through the process of life without me. So can you talk a little bit about successor guardians and what that means?
So it's generally the next in line. So you can write that in your will. You can have, you know, a statement that says, I want my daughter, Tara, to be successor after I pass away. In Illinois, though, I believe you still have to go back to court and prove that or make it official where you're either still a co-guardian with someone else or you are the, you know, one and only guardian. I believe that is still the case because that is something I really wanted with my brother, Nick. Again, my dad wanted nothing to do with that. But that's what mm-hmm. I would have been successor. It actually stated it in my mom's will stated that I would be the next in line. But it didn't mean that I could pay, you know, I'm guardian now. That's not how it was going to work.
Right. And I think as we age, we probably have to update that occasionally because potentially the successor guardians are also aging
yes.
and may not be able at a certain point to do what they could have done and volunteered to do or agreed to do, you know, 5, 10, 20 years sooner. And so, again, that's something that.
You know, and that's why,
go ahead.
That's why it's so important to. I'm sorry. If you know me, I could talk about all kinds of stuff all day long. It's why it's so important to work with a lawyer that understands or is trained in these specific kinds of things, right? So because mm-hmm. the laws do change all the time. And if you work with a special needs attorney, then they're going to be up to date on the things that are the legal things that are changing. And that's your go-to person when updating. You know, it's not always the cheapest thing to do, but it's really important. Yeah.
Yeah. And I know Fran personally, and okay. I know her story, and she has several people, you know, like in case this person is gone, then it goes to this person. And because as she said, she has two adult children. Mm-hmm. So finding people, they're not yep. twins. So finding people, you know, and even if they were twins, that's, again, it's a level that I don't think a neurotypical thinks about, first of all, mm-hmm. and maybe families of people who are neurodivergent don't think about, but need to. because I had somebody explain, and actually it's in the book, in my book, in James's chapter, his mom talked about the fact that she didn't want her son, when she passes away, to have to deal with her death and a whole lot of other things on top of that. And so early on in his life, they agreed that he was going to go live in a group home. And so he's been there. So at least hopefully that doesn't get disrupted also mm-hmm. when, you know, when she passes. And again, yeah, Fran says, I've been thinking about my kiddos' future since they were born. Mm-hmm. And again, I just don't think that is something that I think about. My daughter is neurotypical. I don't think about what's going to happen to her when I go. It's like, well, I know she's going to be sad, but she's capable. She's competent. She can right. understand things, and it's part of life. But the thinking that someone with a child who is neurodivergent has to think about, and then also the siblings have to think about, it's a very different line of thinking.
Yes. I mean, it can be quite complicated for the sibling to have to step in the role of fixing everything or taking care of everything when they're grieving and then their sibling is grieving. And how do you explain that? How do you explain mm-hmm. that to them? How do they, what resources are out? You know, there are resources out there for that, but that is not, I mean, I think siblings do think about that, you know, how am I going to explain it to my brother or sister? And it depends on the disability too, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It is a tough road to travel, for so many reasons. But let's talk about, so you said you started SIBS about 18 years ago and you started it because of your brother, Nick. I'm curious, when Nick was born, was it in the 1980s, the 1990s, later?
78.
In the 70s? Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the special ed law was in place then. Mm-hmm. So as a sibling, when you saw your brother come to school, because you said he's a few years younger than you, how was he treated? And if he was treated differently than you were treated or thought he should be treated, what did that do for you?
Well, I never went to school with him. We never were in the, nope. He was, so at that time, our school district only had like the special ed programs in certain schools. So
okay.
he, and he would have been in like a higher needs classroom. So he like in my school, in grade school, it was, I don't know what they even categorized it at, but I would say that they were folks that could walk and talk and, take care of their own things, where Nick couldn't. But yeah, so I never had the experience of being in any school. We didn't even go eventually to the same high school. He went to a different, and that's a story. My parents actually worked hard to get him out of the school that he was, that my high school, because, and I absolutely agree, they went through due process, because they didn't have the supports and services that particularly Nick needed. And so there was another high school that did. And so he was able to go there. But the sad thing for Nick was that I think almost every year he went to a different school. So.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So it was hard for him to even, you know, there's lots of programs in like buddies that they had come in and hang out. And he had that later on in high school. But he didn't, you know, there was no opportunity for him to really make a connection with another student.
Yeah. Right. And yeah, if he's going to a school not in your home area, that makes it difficult too, because he's not going to see those kids in the neighborhood or out at a restaurant or at a movie or whatever, you know, social activity you were taking as a family. I do just want to say, Fran says, I don't want this to seem all drudgery. I'm blessed beyond measure to have both of my adult kiddos.
Oh, and, no.
Right. Yeah, I don't want it either to seem that way, but I do want to kind of put some emphasis there, because I think having that, just having a tiny bit of knowledge that your line of thinking in everyday life, like you, like we said, you know, okay, this, you started SIBS, but it also affects, you know, where you work and how you work. And other siblings that I have had on talk about how it affects their romantic relationships as well. Do you want to address that at all?
You know, I think you've heard from some of the other siblings say we tend to use our brother or sister as a litmus test, you know, like we're testing you to see how you react to our sibling. And for my brother, because he was so involved that I could tell right away, you know, if this was a good person, a friend, or a relationship was a good person, depending on how they interacted with him. Because one, he's nonverbal, but he's very touchy-feely and wants to hug you and kiss you and play with your hair. And that could be pretty intimidating for some people who have never had any interaction right. with others. Yeah. So, yeah, I was lucky, I have to say, that between my friends and my husband now, it was easy. It wasn't anything. Yeah, everyone. And I think because as a sibling, I'm very particular about who my friends are or who the people are that I interact with. And I think that's one of the reasons too, why I got work besides Nick getting involved in the field, working in the field, I felt comfortable with them. Like I feel comfortable with people who want to help other people. So yeah. Okay. I'll let you.
It's really interesting as you talk about that, because I think about, you know, just kind of how my husband and I came to be. And he grew up having a cousin who had polio. And he was around that family member and that family often. And so it was very normal for him, you know, to, sure. to talk differently, to act differently than, and yet I didn't really grow up with any cousins. I have a much younger cousin than I am, who has some challenges, but I didn't see him as often. And I'm the one who went into special education and am so passionate about it. And, you know, and then, yeah, so I just thought that was interesting, you know, as you're talking, like you kind of gravitated naturally to certain people. And I think God put my husband and I together for particular reasons that I haven't always recognized all of those reasons. But yeah. So let's talk about what SIBS does, what kind of supports, you know, how people access you. You know, as we said, we know it started because of your brother. It's been around for 18 years, but let's get into some of the more nuanced things of what you all do and what you can provide.
So what we have done to what we do now is different, but in general, in a nutshell, so we're kind of a host of resources. So a sibling, actually a parent, can come to a service provider, can come to us about a number of things, whether it's how do I support my other child? I need services. What's going on? How do I go about that? How do I talk to my service facilitator? I have services, but they don't seem to be listening to me. I mean, provide a lot of information and resources across the board. What we're kind of known for, though, is having our in-person gatherings for adult siblings. We are reinitiating that, hopefully, in this next year. COVID really put a damper on us kind of connecting. Yeah. Although we did very well connecting with others throughout the state with the Zoom, which is nice. But people are kind of biting at the bit to get in, you know, some situations where they can meet people face to face. So we'll be working on that. In the middle, we'll also be still doing some Zoom stuff, maybe some informational sessions. We have one coming up where we have an adult sibling talking about updates in policies in Illinois and how that's going to affect not just our sibling, but really the entire family. I don't know how much this audience knows about sib shops, but one of the things we are really passionate about is ensuring that sib shops are available throughout the state of Illinois, which the northern Chicagoland area definitely has more than like central and southern. So real briefly, a sib shop is a group for young brothers and sisters to almost like a parent support group. You know, it's not really a support group, but it's more of a peer mm-hmm. group that provides information. It offers opportunities for siblings to meet one another in like a fun and recreational space. And it's one of those things. So the first time I ever did a sib shop, listening to the children like brought me chills, because every single thing that they said, I was like, yep, I get it. You're six and I'm 30, you know?
Yeah. But
yeah, I get it. So I know that those type of groups are really important, and it kind of starts the base when we're talking about supporting siblings. Like, we really need to be providing something all along, just like we do for parents, right? Parents mm-hmm. have this group or that group or this informational thing. And so sib shops can be that point for young siblings. We have over the years, so in order to get trained as a sib shop facilitator, you have to be trained by the Sibling Support Project. And right now they are offering training through Zoom. But you can also have the trainer come to your wherever and do the training as well. So we really help navigate like that for folks, kind of put them in the right direction and what they want to do. We've helped folks start their own sib shop program, meaning they got trained, but we would help walk them through what they needed to do to make their group successful, if that makes sense. Oh my gosh. What else do we do? So much. It's really about resources, I'll tell you. Presentations. You know, we like to go to conferences and talk about siblings in some sort of aspect. We talk about all kinds of topics from future planning to sib shops to how parents can support, how service providers can support siblings. Usually you'll see us at the ARC conference, ARC of Illinois conference, every year. We've been doing that well before SIBS was even established. So that's
okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's how a lot of us have made a lot of connections by going to that conference and meeting other siblings.
So you mentioned that there was a siblings sort of network. And so you are specifically supporting Illinois brothers and sisters. But are you affiliated with the national organization? Are you aware of other states that have similar things? What do you recommend to those who are watching or listening who are not from Illinois?
Sure. So the Sibling Leadership Network is kind of the national organization. So it's the Sibling Leadership Network. And they have a map, or they have a resource of all of the states that have a sibling chapter, although we're revamping that name, but it has some kind of sibling program in their state. And so they can help. I tend to help people do that too, just because we are so hugely involved with the network, the leadership network, where we were established about the same time.
Okay. So I am going to pop that up. I do currently have, I'm going to pop up a few things here on the screen. So I already have how they get a hold of you is info@SIBSnetwork. So SIBSnetwork.org. If they want to learn about the sibling leadership, it is siblingleadership.org. And then somewhere I had put your website, I thought, but now I'm not seeing it. So I'll grab it and put that in here too, so that we can pull up the website for them to be able to find you specifically, which it's just SIBS. Oh no. Yeah. info@SIBSnetwork and is how to reach you by email. And then SIBSnetwork.net.org, I'm sorry, is how to get a hold of you just to learn about more information about what we're talking about today. Okay, perfect. So now I've got those in there. So those are in the chat. So can you just briefly explain what ARC is for anyone who might be listening who's never heard of it or knows what it does? I know it's not what our main focus is, but just in
we're really just interconnected. You know, we're not, SIBS isn't created because we wanted to do something different. We wanted to partner with other organizations. We wanted to be, you know, a help to do whatever we're advocating for at that particular time. So the ARC is in Illinois, I should say, there's a national ARC as well. And so they're really focused on policy and advocacy and making changes through like federally, the large ARC. Illinois does the same thing, but it provides many, many resources. So they have different components of their organization, like Illinois Lifespan. If you have a question about anything like that you can think of, you call them and they should be able to guide you in the right direction. Sometimes if I don't know the answer, that's where I say, hey, call this person over here. And they'll be able to give you more information. So I don't know everything in the world. So we definitely use the ARC of Illinois to kind of fill in the blanks, because those are the real experts there. And, you know, like you have the Family Support Network, where they're big on, which is part of the ARC, providing information about the home-based waiver program and how do you access it and all the little glitches that may become within that program and how to resolve those issues. Tons and tons of information and resources on their website as well.
And I don't know what it's like to have to fill out all the insurance forms and the Social Security and the Medicare and all of those kinds of forms, but I know that they're difficult just on average. And so having somebody to walk you or walk alongside you, and like you said, look for the pitfalls, like, oh, make sure that, you know, you fill in this box or you say it in this manner. Because in working with families over the years as a special ed teacher and now as a special education consultant, I hear that complaint that, you know, it's so difficult to get simple services.
Yep.
Because of the daunting amount of paperwork and verification that you need what you're asking for, and that you have the diagnoses and you have, you know, all the boxes A through Z checked. It seems like anytime I talk to somebody, that there are literally that many boxes and more that they need to check off and provide and do. So, and Fran says, sounds great. I felt like I was inventing the wheel.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It is not easy navigating all of that. Not at all.
Yeah. So Fran, you've got your ways to connect with them. So make sure that you reach out to them, info@sibsnetwork.org, and they can, you know, help you and also help your children, maybe help each other, but even those, you know, successor guardians in finding what needs to be done. So what do you see as the future for SIBS?
Oh, that's a good question. Every year I want to do more and more. Like, we really want to be able to help people obtain the things that they can't obtain, like financially. For example, becoming a SIB Shop facilitator, going through that training, there's a cost, right? It would be nice if we could offer that as the resource for folks. Maybe scholarships for a sibling going into the helping field. Now we're talking not a lot of money, but, you know, something. That or sometimes SIB Shops costs a participant something. We would like to help fund for someone that can't. Oftentimes, though, the programs will have their own kind of scholarship program. But if something like that were to come up, I would like to be able to offer people some assistance. Or we have, what we have done in the past is providing scholarships for siblings to attend a sibling conference. So there's a couple of state organizations that have their own conferences, and we've been able to pay for part of it, you know, to go and meet other siblings in a larger than what we have. That's what I'm hoping for the future.
Okay. And where do you get the funds to do all that? Are you grant funded? Do you do fundraisers? Is it all of the above? Are there other ways?
Currently, we do not have a grant. We're always seeking. We're always trying. But we're such a little niche. It's really hard to get folks to really understand it, even though we've been talking about it for 18 years. But
right.
But our other avenues are really just fundraising and generous donors and who understand what we do and like what we do. Support us. And
So do you have any fundraisers coming up?
We're always kind of fundraising. Have like where we're going to be in person kind of fundraiser. It's become a little bit challenging logistically due to I live in Iowa and not Illinois anymore. So right. We would love, we used to actually have them in person a long time ago. But hopefully that's a good future agenda, is to try and have one face to face, have a big bash. Okay. We haven't had that.
That would be awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me about Thicker Than Water.
Oh, so that is a book written by, it's written by a whole bunch of adult siblings that share their stories about their experiences and at the time. So those stories are written at the time that book was developed by Don Meyer, who is the director of the Sibling Support Project at the time, and Emily Hall, who helped edit it, who is now the new director of the Sibling Support Project. And it's a really good tool. We're still giving them to people as a resource, really, because a service provider, anybody can learn more about the sibling experience by reading those stories.
Mm-hmm. And do you feel that it's also a comfort to other siblings
Absolutely.
To read?
Absolutely. Yep. Yeah. When I first got the book, obviously I have a story in there, but just reading other people's, every time you talk to another sibling, hear their story, it just brings comfort. Honestly, it's just like, yeah, there's other people they get it, you know, and that's like my passion. I get it. You get it. But now let me help you. Let me help whatever the issue might be. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And that's how I feel about my book, Those Who Can't Teach. It's true stories of special needs families to promote acceptance, inclusion, and empathy. And it's based on interviews that I did with nine different families. Beautiful. And I've had so many people tell me that it gave them comfort because exactly what you just said, they did not feel alone. They felt like, oh, some of the thoughts that I've had, like those are kind of normal, even though they're scary, even though they're like, you feel horrible for having the thought, other people have in your type of situation, similar feelings,
right?
Similar thoughts. So yeah. Well, that's also, how does somebody get a copy of Thicker Than Water?
You still can get them on Amazon and maybe some other book, what's one book? Forget the other publisher that might have it.
Barnes & Noble?
Possibly. You probably can find it in a library at this point in time because they're not making any new ones at the moment. Okay. Yeah. So it's I think the price went up because it's not being produced anymore. and I don't have any left because I've been giving them to people. There was another way to get the book that was a better price, but I can't think of it right now.
Okay. Yeah. And I will be honest.
Well, just Google it. And
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the reasons I started #NoLimits is because of, after writing my book, I realized there are a million stories like the ones in my book, and they're all valid. They all can teach us lessons, which is why it's called Those Who Can't Teach, because if we are open to letting ourselves learn from those who are different than us, just like teachers, instead of feeling less than, we can learn and we can grow and we can all be a better society. And so I thought, okay, I could write another dozen books with, you know, another 100 stories,
right?
Or I could just do this. And so, so here I am 5 years later, still.
That's great. I think that is so wonderful for families because the special ed system isn't always easy to navigate too. And so when families are floundering around trying to figure out what to do and what to say, you know, so that's great that you can be that resource.
Yeah. And so saying that, I am putting it up on the screen right now that if anybody does have a story or you know of someone whose story would be great to share, please reach out to me because I always need guests and I don't always have the time to go searching for them. So I think this is the first time I've ever plugged that where, you know, if you're looking to share your story because your story is valid, it's beautiful. And I want to share it with people. I want to share the limits that you're busting through, that your child or your sibling or your aunt or your uncle or whomever it is, yourself is busting through. So, you know, just reach out to me. And I'm more than happy to schedule that and have you do. And I think Tara will tell you it's not painful.
It's not painful. No, it's fun.
Yeah. And I tell you, like I said, I've been doing this for 5 years now and I love it because I learn so much and that just makes it more important to me because I think, gosh, I'm spending so much time in there and there's still so much to learn that the average person that this is not their point of interest is understanding. And if I just keep putting them out there, hopefully it's making the world, that's kind of my tagline, making the world better for all. And I say one IEP at a time, but it's one story at a time as well. My perspective was changed when I started changing what I thought was possible for people. And that's what I'm trying to do with this and with the book is to change people's concepts of capabilities and to not place that this is all you can do.
Right.
Kind of idea. So we have a few minutes left. And so it's kind of at this point where I offer the guest, you know, if there is something that we haven't talked about that you would really wanted to say today, or if there is something that we talked about and you want to expound more on that, now is the opportunity to bring that out.
There's a million things. I don't have enough time to talk about, but I want to say thank you for what you do. And thank you for having so many siblings actually on your show. The more information we get out to folks and, you know, supporting brothers and sisters, the better. You know, we our envision of the world or Illinois is to have every sibling not left behind so that they can be connected to some information and resources and each other when and shall they ever need it in their life.
Yeah, and I'm glad you said that because I sometimes think, and it might be even my own bias, that when I think about someone with a disability, I think about that person as having that disability from birth. And like in your situation, Nick, it was from birth. But that's not true.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Do you, I think it's a pretty high percentage, and I'm not sure what it is exactly. Maybe you do, the percentage of people that become disabled after birth.
Oh, I don't know the percentage, but there definitely are a number of families and siblings I've worked with that it was after birth. Whether it was, you know, an illness or an accident or something like that. Yeah. And it can happen. And unfortunately, it can happen to any of us, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah. Kathleen's mom says in the book, we're all just one breath away.
Right.
From being someone with special needs.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So that, I just want to touch on that quickly before we have to go here. So for example, if there's someone out there who is in a car accident and now they are needing support there, maybe they have to learn to walk again. Maybe they have to be fed. Maybe they have to, maybe they're paralyzed. I mean, those are the siblings. They can reach out to you. Is that correct?
Yes. We may not always have the answer. It depends on when that car accident is, but if we don't have the answer, we typically would have a resource for them to get information and help them find a way.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. That's awesome. And yeah, like I said, I think I have my own bias of thinking about, because I worked with students with disabilities. So I tend to think younger when I think about, you know, a disability, but it absolutely can happen at any point in anyone's life.
Mm-hmm.
So I appreciate that. And Fran says thank you as well.
Fran, thanks for being here.
Yes, thank you very much for all the comments and the interaction. That always tends to, I think, make it go a little nicer because then you know you're talking to somebody.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. You looked like you were going to say something else. I don't want to stop. Okay.
No. Well, because I could be here for 2 more hours. So, you know.
All right. So with that being said, make sure that you reach out to info@sibsnetwork.org or that you check them out at their website, which is sibsnetwork.org for more information. And if you don't live in Illinois, this one is specifically for Illinois, make sure that you reach out to siblingleadership.org to find one similar to SIBS in your region or in your state. And with that being said, remember, we know who we are, but not who we will be. And that there is no better or more beautiful example, in my opinion, than the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. Have a great week, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey, parents and teachers, are you tired of IEP meetings that feel like a battle? Let's put an end to the tension and create a collaborative, calm, and respectful environment together. Shelly Kino, your go-to IEP consultant, can transform your meetings into positive and productive experiences. With Shelly Kino, your child is her top priority, your voice is heard, and you become confident. Shelly Kino is making the world better for all, one IEP at a time. Visit www.shellykino.com for more information and set up your free 20-minute consultation today. That's shellykino.com, S-H-E-L-L-E-Y-K-E-N-O-W.